Okay, we can get ready to get started today, I guess. We'll have another session on our book of Exodus today. We're going to kind of part 24. I think we might get it in 30, maybe. We might kind of get her, but we'll see.
Are you going to continue until you finish it
out? Probably not. Let Kirk finish his Ephesians when he comes back next week, so... Chapter 34, we're going to look today, and we talked about some of this last week, but I wanted to, we kind of broke up in the middle of, the middle of the thought or the point here, I guess. So I just wanted to kind of go back over a couple of verses and talk about a little bit more today. Exodus 34, and we talked about how Moses went back up on top of the mountain with the new tablets that he'd made, as God had commanded him. And then he went on to, just reading in verse 11, I'll read it, says, "Be sure to observe what I'm commanding you this day. Behold, I'm going to drive out the Amorite before you, and the Canaanite, and the Hittite, and the Perizzite, and the Hivite, and the Jebusite." So he's beginning to tell Moses, or talking about this covenant that he's going to make with them, or this kind of, they're kind of renewing, I guess you could say, the relationship that they had. So he warned to be sure to observe what I'm commanding, he tells him. And then if we go on in verse 12, if somebody would like to read verse 12. Okay, and again, we kind of talked about this some last week. One of the first things, or the first thing that he tells them here is this warning. He says, watch yourselves that you don't make a covenant with the inhabitants. Because, and with the idea that if you do, it's going to become a snare. It's going to become a problem for you. He understood right away they needed to try to get it through their minds that you can't have relationships with these people and with their ideas. And then we'll see where it even goes on here to, you can't be serving their gods and getting connected with them, because what it's going to do is it's just going to just lead you down that path, and before long we're going to be back here again where you're completely astray. Moses was on the mountain for 40 days, right, and he comes back down, and they've already abandoned whatever little bit they'd learned and what faith they had, and they were worshiping this golden calf that they'd created. That happened in a short period of time. And so God's saying, like, when you go into these lands, you can't get tied up with what these people are doing, because he knew it was going to be a problem for them. And then if we go on in verse 13, if somebody would like to read there. Okay, so he says, don't make a covenant with them, but rather, even go, don't just ignore them. He tells, tear that stuff down. Don't have that around you. Tear their altars down, smash their sacred pillars, cut down their asherim. And again, the asherim is just like a surrounding, kind of like a grove of trees or decorative wooden poles or something that sets apart this idol area or these altars. And he's telling them, wipe that out. You don't need to have that around you. Because you don't want to be tempted to make a covenant with them or to be part of that. So that was, and we kind of touched on this last week. And so that was his first command to them, I guess you could say, is when I'm going to drive out your enemies before you. You're going to go into these lands, but when you do, watch yourself so you don't make a covenant and get snared and let it become your downfall, I guess. Anybody got any thoughts there so before we move on? Kyle?
Just one thing real quick about the golden calf. So it was made as an image of God for them to worship that image. So do you think that it would be fair to say that before that, because they made it for the most was God, before that the faith was in Moses rather than God for the most part?
I think so. I think when Moses wasn't there to constantly kind of be propping them up, they couldn't think beyond that.
Like, well, with that, I mean, it's pretty important then for us to make sure that we have our own faith and other people's faith in that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just, that there's just how
Right.
If your belief is not, the foundation is not Christ, but in that.
Right.
That's a thought I have on that. But the other thing is this, you know, when they go and they kind of even to smash the pillars and all that stuff, you think about like when they go into Jericho, and of course that's later on, but like they go and they kill everybody. Everybody that wasn't, they went and they destroyed everything.
Yeah. Right.
I mean, it's consistent with all of that. And to think about that, you know, it's like he definitely did not want them to go and take wives and have all that stuff like they eventually did.
Right. Yeah, I think he just understood and just knew that if they did that, they weren't going to be able to overcome it. Yeah.
Because whenever, you know, there's lots of examples like although 11-11 is a whole lot. I mean, it just keeps rolling into you if you and I think that's the thing that's teaching us here is just make sure you purify what you got around you.
Yeah.
Don't even give the flesh out here to eat.
Right. Yeah. Any thoughts there? We'll move on and to verse 14 now, somebody like to read that.
For you shall not worship any other god, for the Lord, whose name is Jealous, is a jealous God.
Okay, so we talked a little bit about this last week too, as we were closing up, that you think of jealousy as sometimes being a bad thing or a bad characteristic to have. But in this sense, it really shows the love that God has for his people. He wasn't willing to share them with everybody, with the outside world, with corruptible sin. That wasn't something he was willing to share his bride with. Just like a husband isn't willing to share a bride with someone else. You're jealous for her, just like God was for his people. And then, if somebody like to read verse 15 and 16, we'll kind of go on with that too.
Otherwise, you might.
Okay, so this is kind of what we were talking about a little bit before, that, and I referred to it as a generational decline, because just a little bit will happen at a time, you know, some of your people will commingle with them, or your sons will marry their daughters, and things are going to start to slip away a little bit. It might not just happen overnight, but if some of the people are starting to be led astray, then they're going to lead their people astray, and as time goes on, it's going to be completely lost. So I think that example there is important for us too, to watch what we do, because we let a little bit of truth, you know, go, or if we go away from truth a little bit and a little bit more, and then maybe somebody in the next generation that maybe isn't rooted as good as we are, they don't understand they're even letting something go. And we can see this is kind of a snowball effect. And as time goes on and you get generations down the road, I mean, look how far you could be removed from the truth or from what God truly wants of his people. And that's what he was concerned about here, is don't even give yourself that opportunity. You really have to stay away from that and to be guarded against that. Anybody else? Thoughts there? So we kind of... That's kind of what we touched on earlier too, but.
And I think that's one thing that you see even in society, you know, like if we're homeschooling our kids, you know, everybody says, well, they got to see the other side. Well, I don't know. God's not really talking about that. So
yeah.
I think they got to learn the right side, and then, I mean, you know, so I think it's important to again, purify our surroundings. Just for the
yeah. You'll be able to identify what's wrong. Yeah, that's a very good point.
The generational decline is a good way to put that. Like, you see it over and over again. When one go a little bit, the next one you really go wild with it.
Yeah, and then it just goes and goes and goes. And I mean, you think back, you know, just, I really don't have any examples, but, you know, you might see a kid, then you would just, you think, well, geez, well, you know, their grandparents didn't do things like this. They didn't live like this. It's because they didn't, but a little bit slipped as time went on, and then you become a long ways from the truth, I guess. Just as we talked about, you know, people have used a reference here recently of, you know, shooting a gun at a target when, you know, you miss by a little bit at first, but down the road you're a long ways off from the center. So,
and like Rick Reagan had that quote, didn't he, about freedom is just one generation.
Yeah. Yeah,
and even in the society now, and it's always been that way, but in the society now, there's so much information that's so available to everybody that, you know, with just a kind of a click of a button, that pretty soon, you know, it's pretty hard to, you know, the non-truth can be spread pretty wild. We can brainwash pretty fast.
Very quickly, yeah. And then we see this next section here is a little bit longer read, but I wasn't going to talk in detail about all of it. I thought we'd read down through it and point out a few things, I guess. So somebody would like to read this section if they feel like it, 17 down through verse 28. Okay, so here we have this list of instructions that he gives to Moses here that Moses is supposed to carry out to the people. And some of this stuff seems kind of detailed, and you think, well, what really is he accomplishing with some of these tasks as far as for all of this stuff? I think, obviously, verse 17 there starts out, it says, "You shall make for yourself no molten gods." That's obviously something they'd struggled with, but because, you know, any molten god or something they make is, then they become worshiping a physical thing instead of looking towards the true God. So I think that's the first warning he gives them there, is don't make anything as a god. And then he goes on to tell them about observing the feasts, and goes into detail about the 7 days, eat unleavened bread and whatnot, and on throughout these different things here. And what's the purpose of the detail? That's what I asked myself. And I guess I've come to the conclusion that he gave them the detail to see if they're willing to do it. And maybe, you know, made it a little bit taskful for them, because, you know, they had to have their mind on these things. And if they had their mind on these things, and doing what God told them to do, they're going to have less time to stray away from these things. Kind of keeping them busy a little bit. And he didn't just say to Moses, go tell the people to behave and we'll head to the promised land. Because he knew that wasn't going to work. He needed to give them things to think about, things that they needed to be intentional about if they really were wanting to do what he asked of them. And so I think that is a lot of the reason why we have the detail in some of these things. You know, the different feasts and there's different days you do this and different. I mean, there's a lot of in-depth stuff you can look at within this old law that they had, and I think a lot of it is obviously there's a lot of foreshadow throughout some of the details as well, but I think it was just to see if people were willing to do it. This is what I asked you to do. Are you willing to do it? And is almost a challenge to them a little bit to remain faithful as a group of people, I think. So, and then at the end of this section here, he says to Moses, he tells him to write down for in accordance with these words that I have made a covenant with you and with Israel. Okay, he's saying, I'm willing to drive out your enemies. I'm going to go with you and going to clear them out in front of you, but I need you to do this stuff. Okay, I need you to hold up your end of the bargain. You need to trust me and to be faithful. And then Moses was there. How long did it take Jeff to read that section? A minute, maybe? You know, he was there for 40 days and 40 nights without food and water with the Lord writing these things down. I think the significance of that is a couple things. Is God spent time with Moses to truly get him to understand what he needed of the people. And I think Moses was very willing. I mean, Moses was willing to sacrifice a lot for these people as well. I mean, I'm sure about the third or fourth day, he was ready to go down off the mountain. I think we have enough now. And he was willing to stay there and to hear what the commandments that the Lord had for those people. I think we see some a high level of dedication there that Moses had for people that really haven't returned a lot to him. Every time he turns around almost, they have a lack of faith about something, and he's having to intercede with God, trying to help them out. So, anybody got any more thoughts there? I know that's kind of there's quite a bit in that section there, but...
Well, I think probably when you look at Moses' whole history, he was kind of set up for this whole deal. You know, he was put in that Egyptian situation when he was a baby, and he went through all the Egyptian stuff, and he's seen how that corruption was, and when he came to see how they were treating the Israel people, it influenced him also, and then he got kind of wild and killed a couple people, and then he fled for 40 years, and he learned stuff in the wilderness, so he was set up, you know, he was schooled for a long time for this whole situation.
He was.
So he could understand a little bit about how corruption could get in and also the detail of what God wanted, I think.
I think so too, yeah. He spent his whole life learning for it. He was set up for it, or being set up for it, I guess. Definitely. Any other thoughts on that, I guess? All right, we'll move on here. Okay, and then we see somebody like to read verse 29. Continue on. Verse 29.
It came about when Moses was coming down from Mount Sinai, and the two tablets of the testimony were in Moses' hand as he was coming down from the mountain. And Moses did not know that the skin of his face shone because he was speaking with him.
Okay, so we see that after this period of time that... Moses, he comes down with the tablets rewritten, and he didn't realize it, but it said that the skin of his face shone because he was speaking with him or with God. So, not only, I think, you know, God is giving Moses these instructions, but he's giving, I would say, a physical sign or or wonder that the people are going to see and going to understand that, you know, this isn't just Moses necessarily making this stuff up, I guess. You know, there's something more going on. This God that Moses keeps telling them about is real. So I'd like to read verse 30, and you can kind of see the response here, I guess. Okay, so it's hard for us, or it's hard for me anyway, I guess, to really picture what this looked like. I mean, because it's not something that we see or that I've seen. You know, and Aaron knows Moses. He typically wouldn't be afraid of him. But they noticed, they saw that his skin, the way that it shone, and they were afraid to come near him. So it wasn't just like, you know, he had a real good tan, or, you know, his skin looked a little bit different. It was something that frightened them to the point they were scared to go near him. So I think it was a pretty amazing, significant event or phenomenon that was happening here. And again, like I said, it's hard for us to picture that necessarily. But anybody got any thoughts on that? What that might have looked like? And this picture, I'm sure, is not even close to near what it looks like. But
I wonder if it's something. If it's a reflection of us having Jesus within us, and how you know, we're supposed to shine as a light in the world, you know. And I don't know if that was one of God's intentions of this whole deal, but it I think it made, he was different because he talked to God for a period of time. So he was close to God.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what I've always thought about. Maybe that's all.
No, I think there's a lot to that, and I share that opinion as well. Is you know, the glory of God was shining through Moses, and you know, as having, and I didn't feel like we had a lot of time to get into that today, but you know, you look at what Paul talks about in 2 Corinthians and stuff, and references, you know, some of these events, and I think we really see where, you know, this has new covenant significance for sure. You know, the Spirit is within us, and that should shine, and people should recognize, you know, and see. I mean, they saw that Moses was something different was going on with Moses, for sure. And I think we need to, you know, people should be able to see that within us to an extent. I mean, obviously, we're not going to physically look like that, but I think it has a spiritual implication for sure. Right.
And even that in today, people might be afraid of the gospel because then it means that they have to look at themselves and see what they do in their lives and that they need to change, and that's, people don't like to change.
Right. Yeah, there's definitely some accountability there for sure that people shy away from. All right, so if we go to verse 31 now. Someone like to read that.
Then Moses called to them, and Aaron and all the rulers in the congregation returned to him, and Moses spoke to them.
Okay, so now Moses, I mean, obviously sees that they're afraid and they don't want to come near, and he talks to them, and you know, I don't know what he says, but reassures them to come. To come to him. So they did, and they returned, and it said Aaron and all the rulers of the congregation, because I can't remember exactly back which chapter is in, but they appointed basically a head or representative over different groups of people, and then Moses was able to talk to them, and then they were able to go talk to their people and kind of help spread the information, because we got to remember there was, even at this point, 600,000 plus people. So, you know, when Moses is talking to him, it's hard for him to communicate to all of them. That's a lot of people. I mean, you can fill, I think, one of the biggest stadiums in the the United States is 100,000-ish people. Some, a couple of them college ones are upwards of that. But you just imagine one person trying to talk to everybody in there with no technology. Like, it's not very possible. And then you imagine 6-7 times that many people. So he had a system in place where he would talk to these guys, and then they could spread the information among the other people. So we have, these are the ones that are coming to him now. And they're returning to him, and then he's able to speak to them. So we kind of have, you see their represent, and I'm sure it was still a pretty good-sized crowd, too. It wasn't just, you know, 5 or 6 guys. It was I'm sure, hundreds still at this point. So we see where Moses, he calls them, he reassures them, hey, you can come talk to me. And then we'll move on here. Verse 32. Somebody like to read that? Okay, so they, after he reassures them and they come back, then he goes on to tell them everything that the Lord had spoken to him. So he went on, I'm sure, just as we read previously, he went on to tell them that, hey, God has established this covenant with us. He's going to go before us. He's going to clean out our enemies in front of us. We have to follow. We have to do these things to be part of this. So he's telling them these things, and then they're going to go back and tell the people in their groups or whatever. So this information that Moses brings down is going to spread and be distributed among all of them, so they all know what's going on. I guess Moses has got to get them all on the same page and how to do that. Then if we look at verse, anybody got any thoughts there, I guess, before we move on? It seems like a fairly practical system, I guess, that they had. But now let's go to verse, someone like to read down 33 through 35.
When Moses had finished speaking with them, he put a veil over his face. But whenever Moses went before the Lord to speak with him, he would take off the veil until he came out. And whenever he came out and spoke to the sons of Israel what he had been commanded, the sons of Israel would see the face of Moses, that the skin of Moses' face shone. So Moses would replace the veil over his face until he went in to speak with him.
Okay, so he put, after he was done speaking, they were, I think, very much in awe about the glow or the way his face looked, and probably had a lot of significant impact on them. So we see when he finishes speaking with them, he put a veil over his face. He covered that. And then it goes on and says, but when he went in before the Lord, he took off the veil until he came out. And when he came out, he spoke to the sons of Israel what he had commanded. And they would see his face. They'd see this bright, they'd see the glory of the Lord through Moses' face. And it says that in verse 35, the skin of Moses' face shone. But then when he was done speaking with them, he'd put the veil back over. And what do you guys have? What are your thoughts on that? Why would he do that? Why would he cover that? What do you guys think?
I don't think it was COVID.
Yeah, he wore a mask. Yeah.
I mean, probably because they were focused on that and not what he was saying.
I think that would be part of it. It could probably get to be a distraction, and I think it was also when he went in before the Lord and came out, it was bright. But I think over time, I think it faded. And I think Moses didn't want to show the people that how God's glory fades away. Because when they would look at him from that point on, if he just looked normal, it wouldn't have the impact. So he would put the veil on so they couldn't see the glory fading away. So, but then when he returned and talked to God, he would get that glow again and come out and speak to them, and they would listen. But so there is a veil there, and I think that, I mean, the veil has some significant meanings throughout the New Covenant for sure, but there's a separation, though, isn't it, is what the veil is referring to there. I mean, you look at the veil in the tabernacle or the veil in the temple, it was a separation between sinful man and between the glory of the Father. And when that veil is removed, then we could see the glory. And it could be part of the glory. And again, like, so this, there's a lot there to talk about as you go into the New Testament. I knew we wouldn't have time today to do that. But it's definitely a foreshadow of, you know, of things that, in the New Testament. But it had an impact on these people. I think if they saw that that was fading, it might have had, they might not have had as much faith, I guess. You know, when Moses was bright, face was glowing, that had a strong impact. Anybody got any thoughts there, I guess? So, and again, this is, you know, Paul references this quite a bit in 2 Corinthians, and, you know, referring to, you know, the veil and whatnot, but I don't know.
Pretty good picture, really.
I think so, yeah. And I've often thought, and as we went through Exodus, and you read not just Exodus, but a lot of the Old Testament stuff and the nation of Israel and the people, it's always easier for me to think of them and think, man, how could they be so foolish, you know, to not see this stuff. But for us to look back on it and to have all the information, it's a lot easier for us to do that, I think. You know, when you picture them leaving Egypt, having no idea what's going on at all. I mean, they're just completely, they're out wandering around the wilderness. The only thing they got going for them is whatever Moses tells them. And that's hard to have a lot of faith in that. And they definitely had to grow their faith. And they did that through, you know, the commandments that God gave them. He'd tell them to do this. And if they did it, they could see the result. But if they didn't do it, they also could see the result. So I think it helped build that faith. And even talking about some of the commandments and stuff that he gave them, about the false gods and whatnot, and you think, oh man, you think they'd be smarter than that. But do you ever read one of those, you know, silly warning labels, you know, like on a blender, don't stick your hand in there? And do you know why the label's on there? It's because somebody at some point stuck their hand in there. Yeah. So, I mean, it's kind of that same concept. It just seems, well, that's just crazy. How could you be so dumb? But they just didn't understand what was really happening. And it was absolutely a process. And, you know, it was part of God's process to help mold human beings and mankind into what he eventually envisioned as the church and what we have as the new covenant, for sure. Any other comments there today? All right, that's what I had for today. And maybe we should pray together as we close here. Dear Heavenly Father, Lord, we're thankful for the opportunity to look into your word, Lord. We're just thankful for what we can learn looking at is what you did with mankind throughout history and help leading up to who we are today, Lord. And just help us to look at these things and to be reminded to have faith and to trust what you say and to know that what you've said you're going to do and what you ask of us is truthful, and that you'll honor all these promises, and just help us to not make the mistake of losing faith or trying to find a different way and being led astray, Lord. Just help us to be guarded and to be mindful of who you would like us to be, Lord, each day. And we just pray now in Jesus' name. Amen.